Hello, I'm Anton Beckerman, and I'd like to welcome you to the Ag Econ MT podcast, part of the AgEconMT.com information website and a production of the Department of Agricultural Economics and Economics at Montana State University. The podcast series is where we discuss topics and issues in the agricultural and natural resources economics and chat with people who can provide unique perspectives into those issues. Today, as part of our Spotlight series, we are talking with Joel Schumacher, one of the regular contributors to the Ag Econ MT blog and podcast series. Joel is an Extension Economics Associate Specialist in the department and has been part of our team since 2006. Welcome, Joel.
Thank you.
Joel, let's start out with you describing some of your professional and research interests and issues that you focus on as part of MCU Extension.
All right. Well, my research interests, if you look at them in one way, they seem to wander a bit, but if you look at them a different way, they all have kind of a common thread moving through them. And I'm particularly interested in the finance side of decisions, and that's true of both at the individual level and sometimes at kind of the firm level as well, and maybe even at a state or national level. But so one of the main areas that I spend a lot of time on is what they call consumer economics, or sometimes personal finance might be another term for it. So helping individuals in Montana think about things like retirement planning, farm transitioning, money management, kind of those day-to-day issues that affect individuals. And again, there's lots of different smaller issues within those broad topics. So we're constantly, or at least I'm constantly looking at some of those things. And because I have an extension appointment, one of my primary focuses is getting that information off campus. So although I might work a little bit with college students, 99% of what I do is focused at other Montanans. So I have that personal finance, consumer economics thread.
And why is that important for Montana? I mean, what's happening with the transition environment there?
Well, one thing with all of these issues is, first of all, they're an ongoing issue. I mean, there's always 23-year-olds that are just out of college getting started. There's always 64-year-olds that are starting to think about retirement. There's always parents thinking about kids going to college or leaving home. And so you can't educate everybody once and you're done. And then there's also changes over time, whether it be a change in the policy or a law surrounding how 401k plans work or how farm transition work and tax implications maybe of that. So there's some new things that come along, but then there's also this changing people, and they have different needs along the way. And there have been some generational shifts that have taken place, too. So, you know, if you'd been sitting here 40 years ago doing this, you'd have probably had a lot more single-income families. 401k plans were just getting started in the early 70s. Now they're much more common than a traditional pension plan. So, and we also have people that are living longer, and they're healthier when they're in their retirement years. So before, you may have retired at, 65 and had an expectation of living a few years and maybe not in great health. Now, due to advances in healthcare and lots of other things, you may legitimately be 65 and very healthy and expect to have another 20 to 30 years. And then kind of one of the other threads that I do is I do some work with, I'm going to call it alternative energy, but it could be just energy in general. Again, at the individual level, so folks that are looking at biodiesel, especially 6 or 7 years ago, maybe even up to 10 now, there was a lot of interest in, can we do biodiesel on farm in Montana? Are there some regional models that might work? So did a lot with the numbers side of that, the finance piece, not a chemist, so relied on some other folks for that, and then relied on agronomists to tell us about oilseed crops. And then we looked at, what equipment, what does it take to run it, what are the costs, and those kind of things. We've also done some work over the time with wind energy. Again, the smaller scale, so not the commercial scale stuff, although we've dabbled just a little with lease interest for large scale, but more the net metering type approach. And what would it look like for a particular individual, their situation, their electrical cooperative or utility provider, what are their policies? So sort of some background information there about, is this a good financial decision? And then, a lot of times people have the different values on the environmental benefits of maybe adopting one of those. So
some of the folks who are listening might be interested in where to get some of that information. Where might they visit to find that?
Yeah, so one of the things with Extension, we try to spread our information out in a number of different places. So one, with Extension, a great first contact is always your local county office. So all but a couple counties in Montana have a staffed office with personnel, and those counties that don't have an agreement with a neighboring one. So you can always start there. You can always go to msuextension.org, and that's our all extension resources one, and you can search for energy or economics, and my things will come up that way. I've also, I run a couple of other kind of specific from me outreach efforts, and one of them is a series called Solid Finances. So again, if you Google Solid Finances or if you go to msuextension.org/solid finances, it's a series of webinars on personal finance topics. So that's directly available to folks. I also get some phone calls. Sometimes, you know, we do some, get requests to come out in the state and do some things. So we might be out in your neighborhood that way, and we're happy to share information there as well.
And of course, you can get to that extension website, and you can learn more about Joel on the AgEconMT.com website, and that would be under Tools and Resources. There's several links there that you can use to get to those extension resources. Okay, well, what are some of the specific research projects that you're working on right now? What have you learned?
Yeah, so we got a couple projects right now that I guess kind of like to highlight that are kind of specific within of it. One of them is what's called the Montana Poverty Report Card, and we just released that here in late June, early July of 2016. And what we did with that, and again, it was at the request of some folks in the state government, was we went out and gathered a whole bunch of different publicly available data streams on different things that might correlate, be related to poverty at the county level in Montana. So how many people are receiving the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program? How many people, students, are getting the free and reduced price lunch? What's the population? What's the median income on a county-by-county basis? And I think there's about 15 different pieces of data that we gathered from all over, lots of different places, and that's really the value then is we put them together, put them in a 4 or 5 year graph or chart, and we also have the Montana average on there. So you can say my county is more or less than, or this is a problem in communities with higher Native American populations, or this issue tends to be hitting our logging counties in the West. But it's a nice comparison tool. So if you want to have a discussion about poverty in your community or you're a policymaker, this is kind of some great groundwork to give you a starting point. So that's out there. And again, we'll link it off of this website. But also if you go to Poverty Report Card, montana.edu/poverty-report-card, they'll all come up there as well. That was done 5 or 6 years ago, and this is kind of the first update of that. And we expect to probably do that again in a few years as well. So that project has been taking up some time here recently. Another project is we're in kind of the end of year one of a 3-year project, and it's called the Beef to School Project. And there's kind of a wide range of things, but what we're kind of looking at is how beef is getting into K-12 school lunches and maybe a little bit school breakfasts as well. Where are they getting their beef? How is it getting there? Who owns it? And is any of that beef sort of starting in Montana as a calf and then being raised in Montana, processed, and eaten? Or is it following the more traditional channel of, you know, born in Montana, sold in the fall as a calf, sent probably to the Midwest to a feedlot, processed by a larger scale processing firm, and then brought back into the state. So, and we've had some interesting thing. We've done some case studies with some local ranches that are selling to Montanans. We've talked to some local beef processing plants in Montana that are both federally inspected and state inspected. And then we've talked to some schools as well. There's also a nutrition component of this project, but I'm not real directly involved with that. But one of the things that, you know, we have found in Montana is there's some different models being used. So, you know, one particular group up in the northwestern area, they are taking older culled animals, processing the processor buys those animals from local ranchers, processes them 100% of the animal into hamburger. It's never frozen, and it goes directly to the schools in the form of hamburger, which is the main cut of meat that they use. We've got another processor where, again, the animal is owned by the rancher. They raise steers up to basically 18 to 20 months of age. They have that animal processed by a local processor, but the rancher has the ownership the whole time. They then, after processing, the meat's all frozen. A lot of those higher-end steaks go to restaurants and grocery stores in the area. And the hamburger cuts, some of those are sold to schools as a frozen product here. There's also one that we're looking forward. There's a model in Southeast where one school's been receiving a lot of donated beef. So that'll be a kind of a third model we'll look at here in the coming months. But the idea is to kind of get some best practices out there of this type of model works maybe for this type of school, for this type of situation. Not so much a you have to do this or that, but here's three or four models that are working, and maybe here's a couple that worked for a while or didn't work.
Do you see this as being a potential for expansion in Montana for beef producers, or is this something where if you're in that program right now, you can improve your, I guess, profit margin, but others can't enter necessarily?
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. So the first thing you have to look at, especially on the nutrition side, is probably schools aren't looking to, say, double their beef consumption to students, but rather what they're looking to do is maybe change how they're getting that particular beef. You know, maybe it was coming from a national, I'm going to call it commodity beef, might be one word, but maybe by getting it locally, they're incorporating some education. You know, so this, here's what a cattle ranch looks like. John down the street, he has a processing company, and there may be a field trip associated or a story kind of how this, the whole food chain works. There's been an interest, I think, nationally in sort of some local foods, but we may be just changing where the beef is coming from, not really expanding. So in one sense, it might be growing, that maybe there's an opportunity to sell a little more beef that was maybe lived its whole life in Montana, but that would also be cutting back on sort of probably what was still U.S. beef production. So it may be just shifting a little bit how it gets there as opposed to really broadly growing. There could be some arguments that, you know, maybe if more schools did this, there'd be a need for a little more meat processing in Montana. Not large scale, but small
specialized
scale. Yeah, so, you know, it's certainly been a learning experience. Met some different folks, and there's also some different motivations for the different people. You know, some people that we've talked to really think this local is particularly important. They think there's some, and it may vary, but some quality attribute that's different than buying from the commodity beef. We've talked to some folks that do grass-fed. We've had some folks that do low antibiotic. We've had some folks that, you know, do only younger animals. We had one group that did the older animals. And each of these folks feel that their product has, you know, particular value in that situation. So kind of understanding what those are and maybe what's a fact and what's maybe more on the perception side will be some things that we're looking at.
Cool. Well, okay, so this is what you're currently working on. What kind of things do you see working on in the near future, the far future? What do you see as important for Montana, the Northern Great Plains, and how will you perhaps connect it to what you're doing?
Yeah, so one of the things that's kind of always out there, and I know it's going to keep coming up and keep coming up, and there will be various projects and efforts related to it over time, is going to be this issue of sort of that money management side. And farm transition falls in there too. We've got a lot of farm and ranches that are owned by folks that are over the age of 60. You know, so at some point, those operations will either sell or transition to another family member. So there's always going to be issues regarding retirement, transition, shifting jobs, those kind of things. So I am sure over time we're going to continue to do some outreach related to retirement, estate planning, transitioning, those kind of things. And then on, you know, the folks that aren't farm and ranch based, got a lot of baby boomers that are retiring. That's going to continue here as a phase for another 6 or 7 years. So we're going to see many counties in Montana have an increased percentage of older residents, which is going to have some implications for some of those communities in terms of the services those older folks are going to need relative to the workers. But also some of those positions are going to free up when someone retires who's 65. We're now going to have some opportunities in some of these communities where we may have some younger folks with opportunities to stay or move back that maybe they haven't had. So we'll probably do some of those things. One thing that I also know is that there will be projects that I didn't expect that are going to come up. And
happens all the time.
Yeah, being at a relatively small institution, you get to wear a lot of different hats. So I'm sure some hats will be thrown our way that we don't know what are, but we'll try to add some economic value, oftentimes to a project that's broader than just economics.
So what do you look forward to? Our AgEconMT.com outreach website, it's a new effort. It's fairly unique in this part of the country. What do you see being one of the more exciting parts about being kind of a regular contributor and being on the forefront of this effort?
So one of the things that kind of makes my life, I think, interesting is, we do some research, we work with some folks, we find some new information, or we're aware of some research that happened in a nearby state that's useful here. But at the end of the day, that information is only valuable if it gets to the people that are going to do a farm transition, that are getting ready to retire, that are thinking about, putting a small wind turbine in. If you don't know about something, you can't use it. So, I think this website and the podcast is another way that we might reach some people with information that kind of we've already got on hand. And really that makes our work more valuable. Having us know it, that's useful to some extent, but we need to get that information. And, there's some people that'll find out about us through webinars or newspaper articles or the local county extension office. Sometimes we do a conference here in Bozeman each fall that brings people in. But we also know there's folks that don't regularly connect with some of those. So I look at this as a way we might either reach some new people or maybe serve some of the people we already reach in a more convenient way or increase our contact with those folks that we might see once a year. Now maybe we'll touch base with them three or four more times because of, a different way for that to be reached.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting, and hopefully we'll touch base with them a little bit more often. We're our big effort here is to make this information outreach program fairly consistent, fairly regular, so that you get information that comes in that you have a source for on a regular basis. Well, thank you so much, Joe, for visiting with us, and we very much look forward to many more of your insights in future podcast episodes and blog posts. Of course, you can access these and all other episodes at ageconmt.com. We also encourage you to be the first to know about new episodes in MSU Economics Outreach and Extension events by clicking the subscribe on iTunes button for podcasts and signing up for our events reminder email list. And you can do that on the ageconmt.com website. And of course, we'd love to hear from you about what you think of this episode and other informational items on the ageconmt.com website, and encourage you very much to submit your ideas, questions, and suggestions for future posts and podcasts and anything else that's on your mind that's related to economics in the agricultural and natural resources sectors. I'm Anton Beckerman, and we want to thank you for listening and hope the weather is always in your favor.